Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998, The Romanoffs, Child Porn, and Hate Laws.
Hello. I'm very pleased by the really big increase in the number of responses from listeners during the past few months. That's the whole purpose of these broadcasts, getting people to respond, to pay attention, to begin thinking and speaking out. One of the things I often hear from respondents is the comment that it's interesting to listen to American Dissident Voices and learn new things, but how does that help us solve the problems we're facing as a people? When will we begin putting up candidates for office so that we can begin making some changes in the way our society is headed? We must begin making changes very soon, they say, because the Jews and their collaborators are getting closer every day to their goal of a multiracial global plantation where no one will be able to rebel. And they cite to me the things they can see happening around them. More and more non-whites in the population everywhere. More and more trendy white women taking up with blacks and other non-whites because that's the latest fashion they see being promoted by television. Tighter and tighter government controls on our lives with the threat of an end to our Bill of Rights looming ever larger. And I answer by telling them that what is happening is not so much a shift of the general public in the direction the Jews are pushing, as it is a growing schism in our society between the Jewish party and the party of those able to think for themselves. It is a growing division between the lemmings obediently stampeding toward the precipice on the one hand, and on the other hand, the people who are beginning to dig in their heels and say, at least to themselves, "Whoa, I don't want to go over that cliff." And you know, more and more people are aligning themselves with this second party, and not all of them are white racists. There are non-white groups who are no more attracted to the idea of becoming serfs on the global plantation than we are. There are even homosexuals who are not looking forward to living in a society which has a non-white majority. There are even people who call themselves liberals who are not in favor of replacing William Shakespeare with Jerry Springer and Beethoven with MTV. People of every stripe are aghast at the level to which public life in America has sunk in the Clinton era. Of course, we shouldn't draw too much comfort from that observation, because the Jews are continuing to push their programs forward with the aid of their step-and-fetch-its in the Congress and the White House. And as long as the real power continues to be measured by the standards of electoral politics, we won't have any, because the lemmings always will outnumber the independent thinkers. But you know, there may come a day when real power will be measured by other standards, and when the most feasible way of bringing about change won't involve putting up candidates for public office. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves now. The most important thing for us to do now is what we have been doing, and that is to help people understand what is happening to America, to the world, to our civilization, to our people. And I'm not talking about helping the lemmings understand. Lemmings never have understood anything and don't want to understand anything. Lemmings just want to do what they believe they're expected to do, whatever the other lemmings are doing. If you strapped a lemming in a chair and explained to him 14 times in the simplest possible language that if he keeps going in the same direction, he'll go over a cliff, he still won't understand and he won't care. To change the direction of a lemming, you must persuade him that all the other lemmings are changing direction. And the only feasible way of doing that is to change the flavor of what he sees on television. There's not much chance of our acquiring control of the television networks anytime soon. So we just have to accept the fact that the lemmings will continue happily toward the precipice for the time being. But there are people who can understand and who want to understand. People who care about our civilization and about our people. Those are the ones we are having increasing success in reaching out to, in explaining things to, in helping to develop their understanding. And we need to continue doing that. Although we're getting a much larger response now than when we started, it needs to grow a lot more. So far, we've reached only a relatively small portion of these independent-minded people. And we must do more than help them understand. We must persuade them to accept some responsibility. We must persuade them to be more than mere spectators. And if we can do these things, if we can continue reaching more and more thoughtful people and help them to understand what is happening, and if we can persuade them to act on their understanding, then we are coming closer to solving our problems. We're coming closer to having the power to change the course of events. In any case, understanding and a sense of responsibility are prerequisites for any other sort of activity, electoral or otherwise. We need to build a lot more understanding and a lot more sense of responsibility before we can have any reasonable expectation of winning an election. You know, there's one really good thing about the work we're doing now, and that is that you can participate in it. You don't have to become a candidate for public office. You don't have to have your own radio program. You don't even have to spend a lot of money. You just have to be willing to help. You have to be willing to talk with your friends, with your relatives, with your coworkers, with the people you already know. I'm sure that not all of them are lemmings. I'm sure that some of them are reasonable and responsible people. You just need to talk with them. You see, I can talk with you through this program, and together you and I can develop understanding. But you probably have friends who think they're too busy to listen to this program, or perhaps they just need the personal approach that you can give them. They just need to know that someone they trust is concerned enough to try to help them understand. Let me tell you something that's important, something that can be really helpful in leading a friend to understanding. And that is to approach him with something very specific that you have reason to believe he will respond to with interest. Perhaps he's someone who has told you that he's not interested in politics and doesn't want to hear anything about the corruption in the government or about the Jewish control of the media. But there will be something he or she is interested in. Start with that. For example, some people, women especially, are interested in celebrities, in people that have an aura of glamour. You might approach such a friend with a comment about the Russian imperial family, whose remains finally were reburied in St. Petersburg late last month, 80 years after their murder by the communists. The Tsar's daughters who were murdered with him were beautiful, glamorous young women, Anastasia, Olga, Tatiana, and Maria, all lovely girls. Legends about one of these girls, the beautiful 17-year-old Princess Anastasia, have been widely circulated ever since her murder. And their reburial a couple of weeks ago has sparked a number of new news stories and reminiscences about them. One interesting thing about the butchering of the Russian imperial family that you're not likely to see in any of these news stories, however, is the fact that the head butcher was a Jew. His name was Jacob Yurovsky, and he carried out the murder of the Tsar and his family in an especially brutal and sadistic manner. You might bring up that fact in a conversation about the imperial family, and that fact then can lead the conversation into either of two very interesting areas. One of these areas centers on the fact that in a vast country like Russia, with such a small Jewish minority, so many of the butchers of the Russian people just happened to be Jews. I spoke about one of these Jewish butchers, Lazar Kaganovich, just last week. The other conversational area that Jacob Yurovsky can lead you to is the control of our news and entertainment media. Why is it that your friend has never heard about Yurovsky's Jewishness or Kaganovich's Jewishness? Why are the Jews always portrayed as the innocent victims of Russian anti-Semitism instead of the other way around? Could it have anything to do with the Jewish control of our news and entertainment media? Does your friend need to have the atrocities committed against the Russian people by Jews like Yurovsky and Kaganovich tied into something closer to home? How about the continuing flood of Jewish gangsters into America from the former Soviet Union? They circumvent our immigration laws and get in as refugees from persecution because the media, by keeping quiet about Jews such as Yurovsky and Kaganovich and about the Jewishness of organized crime in Russia, are able to maintain the popular delusion that Jews are persecuted in Russia. And because these Jewish gangsters get in, they're better able to run their international trade in white sex slaves and sexually exploited children. Although the white slave trade and the child pornography business are headquartered in Israel, they depend heavily for their profitability on the Jews' ability to move freely from one country to another. Does your friend know anything about the child pornography business? If he's capable of being shocked by anything, he'll be shocked by hearing a few of the facts about this horrible business. The same Jewish gangsters who trap poor, unemployed women from Russia and Ukraine into becoming sex slaves also abduct children, literally kidnap them off the streets in Europe and in America, film them being sexually abused, and sell the films to perverts around the world. Some of these films show babies as young as 2 years old being raped by adults. It's a big business, and though not all the perverts who are the customers for child pornography are Jews, the people who run the child pornography racket are Jews. And that is why this racket is allowed to flourish with virtually no exposure from the mass media. There have been a few hints about the child pornography business in the media very recently, however, in connection with other news stories. For example, there was a United Press International story out of Amsterdam on July 17th about a distributor of child pornography who was murdered recently and about the thousands of photographs the police found in his home. The article also mentioned the distributor's connections to other distributors in Israel, Russia, Ukraine, and the United States. No mention of Jews, of course, but believe me, the people who run this business are just as Jewish as the people who run the white slave trade. Perhaps your friend has an interest in civil liberties, in things like freedom of speech. then begin by talking with him about two men who were sent to prison in Switzerland just last week because one of them wrote a book the Jews don't like and the other one published the book. It sounds almost incredible that this could happen in a modern civilized nation like Switzerland, but it did because the Swiss people let themselves be tricked into accepting a law in 1995, just 3 years ago, making it illegal to criticize Jews or to say anything the Jews find offensive. The Jews had mounted a big propaganda campaign to get this law passed, claiming that it would put an end to hate in Switzerland. They got all of their bought politicians and their bought Christian church leaders to speak in favor of the law. And in Switzerland, just as in the United States, the Jews have most of the politicians and the leading church spokesmen in their pockets. So they got their law passed in 1995, calling it an anti-hate speech law, and the Swiss felt very proud of themselves for being against hate. Then, having made it illegal to criticize them, the Jews launched their campaign to extort $7 billion in World War II reparations from the Swiss. Neat, huh? Swiss, who understood that the Jewish demand for gold was extortion, were afraid to say so publicly from fear of being prosecuted under the new hate speech law. And so the Jews had been able to move ahead with their extortion campaign against the Swiss without fear of having their wild claims for gold be contradicted by the muzzled Swiss. And last week, Swiss author Jürgen Graf and his 78-year-old publisher, Gerhard Forster, were ordered to prison by a judge in Baden, Switzerland, under this new hate speech law because Graf wrote a book in which he stated that fewer than 6 million Jews were killed in the so-called Holocaust. Graf didn't deny that the Germans killed some Jews. He just wrote that all of the evidence indicates that fewer than 6 million were killed. And so the Jews complained that Graf was, in effect, calling them liars by refusing to accept their figure of 6 million killed. And by calling them liars, was inciting hatred against them. So the judge ordered Graf and his publisher to prison. And as I said, that was just last week. Isn't that clever? You plan an extortion campaign against someone, but then before you make your extortion demands, you persuade your intended victim to muzzle himself with a hate speech law so that he can't defend himself against your extortion. That's what the Jews have done to the Swiss, and that's what they're trying very hard now to do to Americans. They're campaigning for the same sort of hate speech laws to muzzle Americans that they are already using to muzzle the Swiss. And Bill Clinton is one of the biggest advocates of the new hate laws the Jews want for silencing American dissidents. When three white ex-convicts killed a black ex-convict in Texas a few weeks ago by chaining him to the back of a truck and dragging him, Clinton seized on this bit of drunken hooliganism as a reason why America needs a federal hate law similar to Switzerland's. If you noticed the details of the way the media handled the news of the Texas killing, you can see the collaboration between Clinton and the media Jews in pushing for a federal hate law. For example, the black who was killed was, like the three men who killed him, a criminal, an ex-convict. But most news reports carefully avoided mentioning that fact. Instead, they described the black as disabled, almost creating the impression that he was confined to a wheelchair, or at least on crutches, when as a matter of fact, he was walking along a road with no apparent disability when he accepted a ride from the man who later killed him. It's clear that the media were trying as hard as they could to make this black ex-con into a sympathetic figure, so that they and Mr. Clinton could use his death as an argument for a federal hate law. One might think they would have picked a better example of a racially motivated crime to use as an argument. After all, racially motivated assaults, murders, and rapes happen every day in America's cities. But you see, they needed a crime with white criminals and a black victim. And those don't happen very often, so they had to take what they could get. Anyway, it gives you a pretty clear indication of who it is they are so eager to silence with their new federal hate law. It isn't the blacks. It may seem incredible to reasonable people that the government could hope to end hatred in our society by passing a law. But of course, it's not reasonable people who really count in this matter. It's the lemmings, and they are ready to believe whatever the government or the mass media tell them. And of course, it's not really hatred that the government and the media Jews hope to end with a federal hate law. It's dissent. They want to muzzle reasonable people in America the way they've muzzled them in Switzerland. Anyway, to repeat what I said earlier, to help your friend understand what's happening, don't try to explain everything to him at once. Start with a specific thing you believe he'll be interested in. The murder of the Romanovs by a Jewish Bolshevik, the growing power of Jewish organized crime in America and its control of the international trade in child pornography, the threat to Americans' freedom of speech by the Clinton government's push for a federal hate law in this country like the one in Switzerland. Give him specific facts, just like I give them to you. Tell him where he can check it out for himself. And by the way, that conviction and sentencing of the Swiss author and publisher were reported by the Associated Press on July 21st. You can go to the internet or to any large public library and find the Associated Press story for yourself. Then show it to your friend if that's what he's interested in. I'll keep telling you about things like that in these weekly broadcasts, but you do your part too. Thanks for being with me again today.